carefree a short boyish bob can sound at about 7 months, but pregnancy is not the time to try it out. Don't forget, your face is pregnant now too, and you need bone structure to pull off that Natalie Portman look. Sure, Mia Farrow looked adorable with short hair when she was pregnant in Rosemary's Baby. But remember, that was a pretend pregnancy. And besides, remember that baby? Between us, girlfriends, you may end up looking more like Schlitzer the Pinhead than a gamine if you cut your hair when you are ripe with child. And your partner, whose nerves are already pretty raw at this point, would probably snap if you cut your hair, since most men prefer long hair under any circumstances, even if it makes you look like a crossdresser. To let you know how overwhelming this haircutting urge can be, I'll relate my own experience. I've always known this prohibition against changing hairstyles in pregnancy, and I was able to withstand the temptation for 3 whole pregnancies. Then, during my 4th pregnancy, I decided to test the rule. Perhaps I thought it was a stupid rule, or it didn't apply to me, even though I was the one that made it up. Who knows what insanity was racing through my brain? So I went and lopped all my hair off, and never did a human head more resemble a coconut. It wasn't a bad haircut. But if you're puffy and overtired, no haircut in the world would make you look better. You will look like a grape on a watermelon, even if Oscar Blandy himself styles you. The other protein in your body that will be growing as fast as your hair will be your fingernails and toenails. If you have previously had the flimsy kind of nails that bend and peel, you will love the new nails you get to enjoy during pregnancy. They are not only growing faster, they are harder and healthier. In fact, if you notice your nails getting worse rather than better at this time, you should discuss it with your doctor immediately, because it could indicate that your body is not getting enough protein to keep you and the baby healthy. This is a good time to pay more attention to manicures and pedicures. If you can find the time and money, have them done in a salon. You can use an hour or two of someone massaging your hands and feet. Besides, as pregnancy progresses, only the most limber and determined of us will still be able to cut and paint our own toenails. You will enjoy having pretty hands, especially when you feel that everything else about your appearance is questionable. Around the 3rd trimester, you will be tempted to ignore the pedicures, not just because they become impossible to do yourself, but because you rarely see your own feet anymore, that you never notice if they look groomed. But this is when pedicures become particularly important, because your toes are usually right in your obstetrician's face during internal exams, and even more so during the long hours of labor and delivery. I gave up the bikini waxes about 7 months into pregnancy, mostly because I couldn't see my pubic hairs from any angle, but I ferociously kept up appearances where my feet were concerned. One girlfriend took this advice so much to heart that when her water broke, she immediately ran for the nail polish. She sat on a suitcase to paint her toes so that she could reach them all. Then she slipped on some rubber sandals and left for the hospital. By the time she finished checking in and getting to her room, her pedicure was dry. Now that's a woman with standards. Your skin. Pregnancy can be a trying experience for your skin. First, there is the obvious challenge of stretching enough to allow the growth of another human being within your body. You may sometimes wonder, too, whether your skin will be able to encompass your gigantic breasts without suffering some kind of permanent damage. The bottom line, of course, is that the skin will stretch to meet these challenges. Have you ever heard of anyone who spontaneously explodes under the pressure of pregnancy, even in the National Enquirer? But this stretching will not be entirely without incident. Let's talk about some of the specifics, shall we? Stretch marks. Stretch marks are lines on your skin that look like runs in your stockings. If you can imagine your breasts, behind, and belly wearing stockings, they occur when the skin stretches more than it wants to. During pregnancy, they look rather reddish or purplish. But long after the baby is born, they will look almost white or silver. All girlfriends ask each other if they got stretch marks, as if to determine whether God was fair when he made it happen. It's sort of like, I got them, and I would be pretty disappointed if I'm the only one in our gang who did. Damn it. Here's the news on stretch marks. The only way to guarantee that you won't get stretch marks is to make sure you are born to a woman who didn't get them, and whose mother didn't get them either. In other words, it is largely a matter of heredity whether you will get stretch marks. What about all those lotions and oils that are for sale, you ask? Useless. Go ahead and massage them in if you like the smell, or if you believe that it doesn't hurt to cover all the bases, but they cannot fight genetics. Those creams, lotions, and oils can come in handy for another reason. They might help soothe the itchiness that comes from skin being mercilessly stretched. Some women really suffer with this itchiness and their temptation, especially when they get undressed for the day, is to scratch their belly and sides until their skin bears fingernail marks. If this gets really out of control for you, tell your doctor, because creams and antihistamines can be prescribed to keep you from tearing yourself to shreds. But if you're only mildly itchy, it might be pleasurable to massage yourself with these magic salves. If you can get your mate to play along, you can use the lotions and oils to lubricate all sorts of things. By the way, I've never really found stretch marks to be the odious things that some people think they are. I suppose if you put on a bikini and go out for a sun bath, they can be a tad imperfect. But artificial tans cover them nicely, and everyone knows that a real suntan is a terrible idea. Your complexion. Quite frequently, newly pregnant women get pimples for the first time since they were teenagers. Hormones are potent chemicals, and they can mess up your skin almost as much as they mess up your emotions. Talk to your doctor about whether you can continue with your proactive regimen, but giving extra attention to keeping your complexion clean is a must. Trust us, this will pass as soon as your body equalizes its hormonal seesaw. In the meantime, just don't pick. Besides, if you take extra time making your hair look great, no one will notice your spots. Again, on the subject of hair, you may find it heavy and dull early in pregnancy. This is because your scalp, being skin, is subject to the same hormonal mayhem that is affecting your face. You may find that your scalp is oily or flaky for the first time in your life. The girlfriends offer this general rule. Always have scrupulously clean hair when pregnant. If you think you can go one more day before you need to shampoo, you would generally be wrong. Heavy hair that hugs your skull would do absolutely nothing to draw attention away from your face and its problems. Another way in which your skin might tick you off is by getting little red dots or broken capillaries. They are small and not particularly unattractive. The red pin dots usually come during pregnancy, and the broken capillaries are usually the result of a lot of long, hard pushing during delivery. You may want to have them removed by a doctor after the pregnancy, since they tend to stay with you long after the child has grown up and gone to college. In keeping with your general condition of overall fertility, you may find strange things growing on your skin. Lots of my girlfriends got skin tags, which are little teeny flaps of extra skin. Two popular places for a tag are under your arm and on your eyelid. Perhaps this is because there's skin rubbing on skin in these locations. One of my girlfriends even got one on her labia. These aren't dangerous at all, unless you pick them, in which case they could become infected. Just leave them alone, and later they can easily be removed. Changing colors. Pregnancy does an interesting thing to your pigmentation, a subject that is not often discussed by anyone other than your girlfriends. You would change color in all sorts of places. The first change you may notice is that your nipples get darker. If they were pink before, they will look more purple when you are pregnant. And if they were beige before, they will turn brown. The nipples and the surrounding pigmented area also get substantially larger. So that what once was the size of a half dollar may grow to about the size of a small pancake. The girlfriends have found that after pregnancy, the nipples may return to approximately their former size, but it will be a long time before they regain their former color, if ever. Here's a newsflash that your doctor will probably never point out to you unless you live in Berkeley. Your labia, the lips of your vagina, change color too when you are pregnant. They get darker and more engorged with blood. Take a hand mirror and look for yourself if you don't believe me. Just as your nipples get bigger, so do your sexual organs. This change might sound a bit alarming to you at first, but nobody really sees it besides your partner and your doctor, so don't be embarrassed. Of course, you may want to reassure your partner that this is a completely natural state because oral sex could seem to him like an athletic feat at this time. The best news about the changes down below is that many girlfriends feel as if they are constantly sexually aroused because their organs are engorged with blood. My girlfriend Tracy says that she became nearly orgasmic if she walked fast because her legs rubbing together was like never-ending foreplay. Kind of makes a trip to the mall an entirely new experience, don't you think? But one minor drawback to the swelling down there is the sudden inability to aim your urine stream. I know that might sound like a meaningless complaint, but you will often be asked to pee in a specimen cup, and it would be nice if you could do so without getting your hand wet. Incidentally, my girlfriend Shannon says the lips on her face, not just her vaginal lips, also got fuller and darker. Wouldn't you just love to have that happen to you? My lips stayed pretty much the same, and I still lived for my lipstick pencil. But who knows? You may be as lucky as Shannon. Pigment can also play nasty tricks on pregnant women. Some Caucasian women get what is diabolically described as the mask of pregnancy on their face, which usually looks as if you've got a skier's tan on your cheeks and forehead, but that you had sunblock on the rest of your face. This irregular coloring goes away after pregnancy, but it can take a while. Stay out of the sun because it only makes matters worse, and try foundation makeup to blend everything together. Almost every pregnant woman will eventually get a pigment stripe. We call it a treasure trail around here, that extends from the top of her pubic hair toward her belly button. We have no explanations for this. We just know it happened to all of us. It was less noticeable on the girlfriends with more olive or brown in their skin, but on the Irish girls like me, it was pretty obvious. People will tell you that this irregular pigmentation goes away after pregnancy, but it took a couple of years after my last baby was born for mine to disappear. Maybe it's just my imagination, but I think I can still see that trail when I slouch and my baby belly folds over itself. I also think the fine hair that covers my belly has remained darker in the middle. Of course, my belly hasn't seen the light of day since my first pregnancy, so the contrast between light skin and dark hair is glaringly apparent. No wonder millions of men are fans of Victoria's Secret models. A really good stomach is rarely seen by the father of young children, especially in the privacy of his own bedroom.
Chapter 4. I never imagined my body could feel like this. People tend to concentrate on the millions of external physical changes that occur to pregnant women. But the internal changes, not even including those in your uterus, are equally dramatic. As we have pointed out, pregnancy is not limited to your womb. It is a full body experience, and you may be shocked by how strange and different your body will feel. Everything from stuffy noses to burping can be pregnancy related. Your digestion. A pregnant woman's digestive processes are slowed way down by pregnancy hormones. Evidently, nature wants to ensure that every last vitamin and mineral is extracted from every morsel of food that you eat, so it lets the food sit in your stomach longer than usual. What that means for you can be reduced to two words: burping and farting. You may be loath to admit it, but if you take a poll of partners of pregnant women, they will be unanimous in their astonishment at how much free-floating gas there is. All that food just sitting around your intestines ferments, and you become carbonated. The indelicacy of this condition suggests to me that pregnancy is one of life's best reminders that we are just a few generations removed from dragging our knuckles on the ground when we walk. But if you start thinking that life is unfair, making women endure such a humiliating experience as pregnancy, remember this: it is usually men who go bald. Let's start with flatulence. It isn't much of a problem if you spend a lot of time alone or with children under the age of 4. In fact, young children are deeply respectful of people who can pass wind on command. It may shock and offend your partner, but even the most fastidious pregnant women soon tire of leaping out of bed or fluffing the sheets serendipitously. And they soon just let it rip with little regard to whether their beloved mate is pregnant. But in our inimitable way of caring more about what near strangers think of us than what our mates think, being out in public can be fraught with anxiety for those of us with gas. Unfortunately, most of us are not as well adjusted as my girlfriend Corky, who will stand up in a small gathering of people and leave the room, announcing over her shoulder, "Excuse me, but I have to fart now." The rest of us feel the slightest intestinal pressure and rush to the ladies' room, praying the whole way that no one else is in there. Burping is equally hard to control. You can be in the middle of telling an interesting story and out sneaks a little belch, as if it were an exclamation point. These burps often come out of nowhere with no warning, leaving the burper as shocked as her audience. And pregnant burps are not the short little gasps that most women insist they make. They are long, ripping sounds that would make any adolescent boy jealous. Unless your doctor will allow you to take in acids, which we will discuss later in more detail, there really aren't that many things you can do to relieve all this gas. You should probably avoid carbonated drinks and see if that helps. It seems to the girlfriends, though, that the biggest gas offenders are precisely the foods that you are supposed to eat to make a healthy baby. Things like broccoli, spinach, and cauliflower. What's worse,
These foods give an aroma to the burps as well. Another effect of this relaxation of your digestive muscles can be heartburn. Heartburn, in case you have never had the joy of experiencing it, feels just like it sounds. It is a burning sensation at the base of your esophagus, usually on the left side, it seems, and it can go hand in hand with burping. It's like an upset stomach, but it's up higher, closer to your chest. Some women suffer through heartburn throughout their entire pregnancy. Others don't succumb until the baby has grown large enough to put pressure on the muscle, interfering with its closing tightly that keeps food down in the stomach where it belongs. This can result in stomach acids leaking out. Certain foods seem to make heartburn worse, much like the burping agents. But while I personally was willing to forego my ration of legumes and Brussels sprouts in the name of keeping the burn and gas down, I could not give up my daily ration of peanut M&Ms, and they were the worst culprits of all. If you are lucky, and if you have selected your obstetrician well, you will be allowed to take antacids. Antacids become a pregnant woman's best friend, and it is wise to have them with you at all times. My girlfriend Julie had huge bottles of the chewable kind in her car, beside her bed and at work. When you want an antacid, you really want one, and you want it now. They can be chalky and disgusting, even if they do now come in a rainbow of fruit flavors and promise to dissolve immediately. But, believe me, they actually begin to taste good after a while. A girlfriend's tip. Always check your mouth in a mirror after eating an antacid, because it can leave you with white, chalky stuff on your lips or at the corners of your mouth, making you look as if you are on antipsychotic medication. One last bit of information regarding heartburn. No matter what people may tell you, heartburn does not mean that your baby will be born with lots of hair. I had heartburn so bad in all four of my pregnancies that I could have spit fire, and all my kids were born as bald as Uncle Fester. Morning sickness. As soon as a woman announces that she is pregnant, people ask her if she's feeling sick yet. This is because the stereotypical pregnancy includes a good season of nausea. This nausea, with or without vomiting, is called morning sickness. The girlfriends and I think that it should be called something more accurate and suitably dramatic, such as progesterone poisoning. Calling it morning sickness is particularly misleading because it can strike you at any time of the day or night. Some women even find that they feel semi-nauseous all their waking hours. There is some good news about morning sickness. First, not everyone experiences it. Second, if you do have it, it should go away by the end of the first 3 months, never to return again. Please don't hold me to this. Third, a popular old-fashioned belief is that the worse your morning sickness, the less likely you are to have a miscarriage. I guess it is believed that the babies of particularly green mothers are already exercising such control over their mother's systems that nothing is going to get rid of them. All I know is, every time my doctor's nurse asked me how I was feeling, and I answered, sick, she smiled and replied, good. And fourth, if you are feeling unbearably wretched soon after learning you are pregnant, you might just have twins in there. The first and foremost girlfriend's rule about morning sickness is this. If you get morning sickness, it does not mean that you have done anything wrong during your pregnancy or that you are ambivalent about having this baby. Remember how PMS and cramps used to be considered psychosomatic, and doctors told women that they were only experiencing these manifestations because they were weak or crazy? Then they realized the massive hormonal fluctuations that women experience each month would bring the Wolverine to his knees if only he had ovaries. Some assholes still suggest that you are barfing your brains out because you are not sure if you are ready to become a mother. Heck, if that were the case, then all women with half a brain would be vomiting all the time, because any fool is smart enough to know that motherhood is a scary business. If you feel nauseous, it's probably because you and progesterone just don't get along. That's it. Nothing more. Morning sickness and seasickness have a lot in common. I've had the nausea that comes with pregnancy, and I've been on a round-bottom boat in a storm at sea, and the experiences were really quite similar. For example, they both strike an otherwise healthy person. They also have what I call a head component. Your equilibrium is affected, and you might feel dizzy or spacey. I found no relief from seasickness or morning sickness in throwing up, as there can be with stomach flu or food poisoning. Some of my girlfriends felt otherwise about this, but my experience was that I barfed. I continued to feel sick, and I barfed some more. For this reason, it doesn't really pay to stick your finger down your throat in a desperate attempt to rid your body of the offending poison, since it isn't reaching your stomach. Since progesterone poisoning has little to do with what you have eaten, you don't stop vomiting simply because you don't have any more food in your stomach. You just move on to the dry heaves, or worse, spitting up stomach bile. Even yet, though most women do not get sick because of something they have eaten, the sight or smell of particular foods can accelerate the gagging. That, too, is true of seasickness. A whiff of cottage cheese can send a victim of either malady running for the toilet or the side of the ship, even if she hasn't actually eaten any of it. You may be asking yourself right now, how do I know I will have morning sickness in my pregnancy? The answer is, you can't predict. Even if you have been pregnant before and sailed right past morning sickness, it doesn't mean you won't get it this time or some other time. Some of my girlfriends suggest that there is a link between the gender of the baby and whether you will be nauseous. They seem to feel that carrying a girl might make you sicker than carrying a boy. I have no idea if this is true, and I was ill with all four of my kids, so it sounds a little like hoodoo to me. I would imagine that the scientific explanation could be the presence of the extra female hormones that a baby girl might share with your body, a sort of estrogen overload. But for every girlfriend who has told me that she was sicker with her girl babies, I have another that swears that pregnancies with boys were more nauseating. Some studies have indicated that we women recognize boy fetuses as foreign, what with their Y chromosome and testosterone, and that can make us sick. By the way, another old wives' tale is that the baby girls make your face distort more, and I swear that was true with me, but that's getting off on another tangent. Morning sickness is not necessarily one of the first physical signs that tell you you are pregnant. What usually happens is, you find out you are pregnant and you feel pretty normal in the digestive sense for another couple of weeks. You will be tempted to start congratulating yourself that your superior health and positive attitude, or the power of prayer, have spared you the nausea that lesser mortals have to endure. Then one morning, you walk downstairs in your nightie to get some orange juice from the refrigerator. You open the door of the fridge and get a whiff of last night's meatloaf. And next thing you know, you are puking in the kitchen sink. Morning sickness does not strike all victims with equal intensity. Its severity can almost be measured on a sliding scale. At one end are those lucky ones who have gotten one green moment and then never feel a bit of nausea for the rest of their pregnancy. At the other end are those who vomit so much that their doctors put them in the hospital for intravenous fluids and occasionally medication to stop the incessant sickness. This is a condition called hyperemesis, and it is miserable for the mommy and potentially dehydrating and exhausting to her and her baby. Before I knew how awful the condition could be, I actually felt a pain of guilt, of envy. For those women who were on the nausea diet, even if it meant that they vomited frequently, because I was getting fatter by the day. Isn't that so sick? I'm ashamed. But I share it with you because we're girlfriends. Over time, I learned that even those pregnant women who were sick as dogs in the first trimester ended up gaining as much weight as we who never met a meal we couldn't force down. It pays to be careful what your obsessive mind wishes for, because you can end up gaining 65 pounds and hurling between every bite. I have one girlfriend, Mary, who was so used to having constant nausea with all three of her pregnancies that she just decided to go on with her life as if nothing were unusual. She would go about her daily business, stopping to vomit when it became necessary, then resume the task at hand. She didn't go anywhere without knowing in advance where the nearest bathroom was, so that she could streak to it should the need arise. BTY. I've recently seen commercials for overactive bladder medications that give away Frommer's guidelines to toilets around the world, so you might want to go to their website and ask for one. Mary also kept towels on the passenger seat of her car so that she wouldn't vomit all over herself when she was caught in a traffic jam. I was always so impressed with her matter-of-factness when I saw her at Mommy and Me classes with two kids and pregnant with a third. She would calmly but quickly excuse herself from a verse or two of the wheels on the bus go round and round, go vomit, rinse, and come back to the group in time for the part about the wipers on the bus going swish, swish, swish. We all knew where she had been and what she had done, but she never mentioned it, let alone complained about it. She became a hero to the rest of us who were complaining about everything all the time. In the middle of the spectrum is where you find most of us. We have our good days and our days when we want to die. On the bad days, even staying in bed doesn't provide relief because we feel just as horrid lying down as we do standing up. So we generally get up and face the day, just counting the hours till we can go to sleep and start a new, and we pray, better day. For those of us in the middle, morning sickness doesn't necessarily mean constant vomiting. In fact, only vomited a few times with each pregnancy. But I felt mildly ill much of the time. It wasn't unusual for me to have to leave meetings or luncheons to get some fresh air during the first trimester of my pregnancies because I was afraid of either fainting or gagging in front of people I didn't think would understand. I wish that I could tell you a secret remedy that would make all pregnancy-related nausea disappear, but I haven't found it in years of looking. What follows, however, is a list of my girlfriend's guidelines. The 10 Commandments of Morning Sickness. 1. Eat small amounts of bland foods all day long. 2. Don't eat anything that doesn't smell appealing to you. 3. Eat something at around 4 a.m. or after your last middle-of-the-night visit to the toilet. 4. Take your prenatal vitamins at night or stop altogether until you are feeling better. Your doctor may want you to take folic acid supplements in the meantime. 5. Do not take your vitamins with citrus juice. 6. When nothing sounds appetizing, try a bowl of cereal with milk or a piece of sweet fruit. 7. If the thought of chewing any kind of food makes you sick, try sucking on natural licorice drops. They can be soothing. 8. Try wearing the elastic wristbands that are sold in pharmacies to prevent seasickness. 9. Skip the saltines unless you have a real craving for them, which I can't imagine unless you're a parent. 10. Follow your cravings. If you really want some particular type of food, there's a good chance that it will actually make you feel a little better. Just be careful if your cravings are consistently for Oreos and Dove bars, as mine were. Most women find that morning sickness disappears at right about the 3-month mark. It is truly a magical feeling the day you wake up, brush your teeth without activating your gag reflex, get dressed without having to pause to put your head in the toilet, and go to the kitchen eagerly thinking of breakfast. And it happens just like that. One day you are miserable and cooling your cheeks on the bathroom floor, and the next day you've never felt better. Your bowels. As I have said before, there is really no aspect of your physical well-being that is unaffected by pregnancy. And this even applies to your bowel movements. First of all, if you are taking one of those popular brands of prescription prenatal vitamins, you may find that your poops are the color of tire rubber. I think it has something to do with all the iron you are taking. But it's just one more thing about your life that will seem strange. And as if you don't feel full enough down there already, with the baby and the fluid and the placenta and God knows what else all jammed into an area that you were once proud to show off in a crop top, pregnancy adds one more ingredient. Constipation. You may notice that you just aren't the same regular gal you were before you were pregnant. Perhaps it is the iron in your prenatal vitamins, again. Or it may be just the relaxation of your entire digestive tract. But this can be a real annoyance for pregnant women. How upsetting you will find this unpredictability of bowel movements will depend on a variety of factors. My girlfriend Andrea determines the mood of her entire day based on a successful BM in the morning, whether she is pregnant or not. Constipation can also be particularly upsetting if you're already uncomfortable about how round your stomach is becoming. And if you're beginning to feel more than a little pissed off at how unfamiliar your body is in so many ways, this can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Constipation is one area where I remain fairly relaxed, probably because I had never heard of anyone succumbing to a poop explosion, and because anal issues are generally not where my neuroses lie. What goes in must eventually come out, no matter how hard and dark, is my philosophy. Many of my girlfriends disagree, however. And they were willing to try anything short of scheduling colonics to rid themselves of that full of shit feeling. Traditional books on pregnancy will tell you to increase the amount of fiber you eat and to drink more water. I believe, however, that you can eat bran and drink water until you're ready to explode and your bowel movements will not really get any more manageable. I think that ingesting something more akin to WD-40 and dynamite would be much more effective, but not particularly well tolerated by the baby. Talk to your doctor if you are constipated. Don't be ashamed to have such an indelicate conversation with him or her. Believe me, far more indelicate things are going to happen in your relationship in the near future. Ask if you can take fiber tablets such as psyllium husk or a fiber drink. If things get really stopped up, ask about taking a stool softener. I took Colace, a small gelatinous pill, and it really got things moving after 3 or 4 days of use. Plus, it was a cinch to swallow, which is much appreciated on those gagging days. Just make sure that whatever you take contains no laxatives. Laxatives can really screw up your digestion. You can get addicted to them, and they can make your stomach cramp up as much as in labor. Not to mention that the last thing your little baby needs is something to make her poop uncontrollably. My girlfriend Denise reminded me of one of the most disconcerting aspects of pregnancy elimination: the public restroom. Sometimes pregnant women find that they must work hard to accomplish a bowel movement. In fact, some of my girlfriends have said that they remember times they pushed so hard to move that they got sweaty at their hairline and made humiliating grunting noises. This can be horrifyingly enough in the privacy of your own home, but it is much, much worse if you are at work and using the employee's bathroom. It isn't so bad in a very public place like Disney World or the beach, because honestly, what do you care what complete strangers think? Unless, of course, they tap on the door to see if you are all right, or worse, shout from their place in the line forming outside your door, asking if you plan to spend the day in there. But to have the office gossip or your own secretary in the stall next to you can be so inhibiting that you would rather succumb to fecal poisoning than do what it takes to poop. The bright side to this difficulty in pooping is that you can consider those big effort eliminations to be practice runs for delivery, because a proper delivery push feels exactly like the most difficult bowel movement you have ever had in your life. Keep this sensation in mind, and you will know what to do when your doctor tells you it is time to push. This description of forcing a movement may run afoul of everything your good, overly attentive mother has told you since you stopped wearing diapers. Remember, she said, don't push too hard or you'll get hemorrhoids. And guess what? This time, mother may have known what she was talking about. Nonetheless, pushing too hard sometimes happens without our realizing until it is too late, which leads us nicely to hemorrhoids. If you're like me, you have grown up seeing those commercials, but you never really paused to think about where those people were putting that miraculous cream, or wiping those little pads, or why they were doing it in the first place. Well, my innocent little girlfriend, they were putting it around their anuses, and they were stooping to that indignity because they had little protrusions like peas down there that hurt and itched them to distraction. Don't you just want to scream? It is almost too horrifying to talk about, but as your girlfriend, I will. There are various ways to get hemorrhoids, so it is rather like running an obstacle course. You may successfully have leapt over the fence, but you may still fall into the mud pit. First, you can get hemorrhoids, which colorful older folks call piles, for reasons I don't want to even speculate about, from pushing too hard to move your bowels. We have just discussed this, so you know that I am not blaming you. Too much pressure down there can cause some of the anal tissue to herniate and stick out, either individually or in little clusters like grapes. Another way you can get them is just by virtue of being pregnant, hard poops or not. You see, the weight of the baby and all the other stuff in your abdomen that is supporting it gets so heavy that it can cut off the circulation in the veins and arteries down there, much as a car tire rolling over a garden hose will stop water from coming out. When the rosy area down there gets its blood all pulled up, it's grape time again. Then, just when you think that you have dodged all the hemorrhoid bullets that nature can shoot your way, it's delivery time. That was it for me. My Armageddon, my Alamo, my little bighorn. I was just fine, black poops and all, until I pushed my first baby, and evidently, part of my rectum out. After the epidural wore off, I hurt in that general area, but I had had an episiotomy and a small tear that required some stitches, so I attributed the pain to those and didn't do any investigating for the first couple of days. Besides, I was not particularly eager to touch any stitches down there anyway. When I got home from the hospital and took a shower, I absentmindedly soaped up to wash my privates, and I nearly fainted dead away with the shock of what I felt. In the soft tissue around my anus were these firm, rounded clumps of tissue. It felt as though my insides were on the outside. I immediately went to bed and cried, at least until a certain newcomer started wailing even louder. I had no idea what I had felt, but I was certain no one else had ever experienced anything like it before, and that I would probably die of it, or at least require a rectum tuck. I was so mortified that I didn't mention my condition to anyone. Not my husband, who doesn't have the stomach for such things anyway. Not my girlfriends, who would, I was afraid, pity me and know that I was disfigured. And certainly not my doctor, who would tell me it was cancer. Finally, after not having heard from me since the delivery, my doctor called to see how I was doing, and I blurted out, "There is something growing out of my behind and it hurts worse than my stitches." I was shocked and relieved to learn that he knew exactly what I was talking about, and that he even had some suggestions to make me feel better. I couldn't believe it. There were actually prescription creams to shrink the hemorrhoids and to lessen the pain and irritation. My doctor also prescribed suppositories, which I suppose were intended to do the same shrinking and relieving on my insides or to ease me back into pooping. But I can't tell you if they worked because, 5 years later, they are still in my medicine cabinet, unopened. My doctor was crazy if he thought I was going to try to shove something up there in my condition. My girlfriend Jay had such a bad hemorrhoid problem after the birth of her first child that she saw a proctologist during her second and third pregnancies. Evidently, he gave her cortisone shots in her you-know-what. While the thought of that procedure makes me go numb, Jay assures me that they really didn't hurt and that they saved her from a shower horror like mine. She giggles when she describes sitting in the proctologist's office, since everyone else in the waiting room was concerned about his prostate and/or was over the age of 70. Everyone had a pretty good idea of what part of her anatomy was being treated, because let's face it, no one goes to a proctologist for a second opinion about open heart surgery. Here is a girlfriend's list of things to try for relief of hemorrhoids, subject, of course, to your doctor's approval. Ask for a prescription cream or ointment to help shrink the hemorrhoids and relieve the discomfort. Use witch hazel on cotton pads, or use medicated hemorrhoid pads whenever the opportunity arises, and certainly every time you use the toilet. They come ready to throw into your purse or diaper bag and will keep the area clean, temporarily pain-free, and might even shrink the little buggers. Take lots of baths. The warm water is not only soothing and the weightlessness of your body a relief, but it keeps the area scrupulously clean, which helps prevent infection. Someone may suggest that you take a sitz bath. What they are referring to is sitting in a few inches of the hottest water you can stand for 20 to 30 minutes at a time. My personal feeling is that if you have that kind of time on your hands, go to sleep instead. You will forget all about your hemorrhoids while in slumberland. Have some kind person go to a pharmacy and buy you a hemorrhoid pillow, which looks like a large, firm donut. In fact, if you live in a two-story house, have the kind person buy you two so that when the baby comes and your pooper is feeling its worst, you don't have to carry both your baby and your donut up and down the stairs at the same time. Better still, invest in one of those circular baby pillows, BOPs, which you can find in many mail-order catalogs. You know the ones. They are covered in bright and cheerful cotton, and the baby is supposed to sit in the hole in the middle and be propped up by the surrounding pillow. I have never birthed a baby who wanted to be seated in one of these contraptions, but they sure were great for me. Ask your obstetrician to refer you to a proctologist, as Jay's did. Those cortisone shots don't sound half bad when your insides seem to be spilling out of your behind. If all else fails, there is always surgery for this area, which you can get after the baby is born. It's even covered by most insurance policies. Chapter 5, Pregnancy and Sanity. The physical changes brought on by pregnancy are numerous and extreme enough to give a woman whiplash, but they would ultimately be manageable if they weren't accompanied by some pretty hefty emotional changes. The inner life of many pregnant women is scary enough to make their mates anxious and vigilant, and their friends impatient and annoyed. I was so bitchy during one of my pregnancies that my friends finally stopped trying to spare my feelings and just told me to shut up whenever they'd heard enough. Some pregnant women become short-fused and extremely rigid. For example, if we asked my girlfriend Janice out for lunch, she would have all sorts of rules, such as we had to eat at 12:15 exactly, no sooner and no later, and the restaurant chairs had to have arms, or she wouldn't be comfortable enough to digest her food, and that her chair had to have padding, or her pee-pee would ache. Keep this girlfriend rule of thumb in mind as you read this chapter. Crazy people are often the last to know they are crazy. Therefore, if you are tempted to skip to the next chapter because you don't see how this one applies to you, think again. You may be crazier than you look, at least to yourself. In fact, ask around, because you may be surprised to learn that you, too, are a victim of gestational psychosis. I made that condition up, so don't go looking for it online. One aspect of pregnancy insanity feels quite like PMS. The answer to the question, how long will this feeling last, is about 40 weeks. Like everything else in pregnancy, its severity varies, not just from person to person, but from day to day. This would be good news to those of you really feeling the effects of the insanity, and not so good news for those of you who maintain that you have never felt better in your life. Here's another bit of girlfriend advice. If your friends who have been pregnant tell you that it was the most emotionally fulfilling and happiest time of their life, don't believe them. Those kind of comments invariably make you feel that something is wrong with you if you don't feel equally ecstatic, and they are undoubtedly inaccurate. Some strange biological force gives women amnesia about pregnancy, so that they forget the less savory details and see the whole thing in a sort of rosy glow. This is just nature's way of making sure that women get pregnant more than once. If you remember too much, you might never voluntarily repeat the experience. What follows are various manifestations of pregnancy insanity. You will probably know them all at some time during gestation. Let's hope you won't feel them all at the same time. I can't concentrate anymore. At no time prior to Alzheimer's will you experience such forgetfulness and lack of logical thinking. Part of this feeble-mindedness can be attributed simply to the overloading of the pregnant woman's brain circuitry. There's just so damn much to think about. You have to decide who your doctor will be, what hospital you want to deliver the baby in, whether you want to know the baby's gender in advance, whether you should get prenatal genetics testing, how to tell your boss you'll be needing a maternity leave, how to tell your mate that your mother will be staying with you for a few weeks after the baby comes, and so on and so on. It is only rational and natural that you should feel confused and out of control at a time like this. But there is more to this aspect of pregnancy insanity. Many pregnant women also exhibit a sort of foggy, daydreamy behavior. You know what I'm talking about. The state of mind that allows you to drive all the way home from work with your dry cleaning on the roof of your car, or to sit in a meeting for hours and not recall a single point that was made. Perhaps you and your baby are already talking to each other, planning, imagining one another's face, being shy about your first meeting. Perhaps you are wondering what a son will be like, or whether your daughter will be nicer to you as a teenager than you were to your mother. You worry that the child may do something to totally embarrass you, like George W. did to Barbara. These reveries are so compelling that other people's chatter may seem irrelevant, and you may want to shake them by the shoulders and shout, "Hey, I'm gestating here." You might become a bit worried about how this lack of concentration will affect your ability to care for your baby when it is born. Don't fret yet. This absent-mindedness is small potatoes compared with how distracted you will be once you have a child in your arms, whom you will worry about until the day you die. Enjoy how low the stakes still are now, because once the baby is born, you will have to worry about more realistic catastrophes, such as setting the baby down someplace and driving off without it. Diaper commercials make me weep. One of the more harmless aspects of the emotional spin cycle of pregnancy is how sentimental girlfriends become. Nearly every mother has a recollection of crying at a diaper or formula commercial on television when she was pregnant. I used to love the commercials for healthcare plans that showed babies being born to deliriously happy couples. One night, toward the end of my first pregnancy, I sat in my son's waiting nursery and played a cassette of lullabies and sobbed until my husband worried that I might need to seek professional care. My girlfriend, Marianne, who recently found out she is pregnant, tells me that she is frequently overwhelmed by her affection for her parents and her husband. She can sob buckets simply by imagining that one of her loved ones might get hit by a truck or struck by lightning before the baby is born. It's all as if she is dealing with how vulnerable she feels over the fragility of all life, particularly the lives of those she loves most. An emotional crisis can occur if you are pregnant during a publicized catastrophe involving a baby. Years ago, when the little girl from Texas, called Baby Jessica, fell down a hole in her backyard, my girlfriend Amy got so upset that she was a mess for days. She felt such empathy for the parents that she was unable to eat, sleep, or even talk on the telephone until the child was rescued. Those television news segments on starving children in third world countries are so psychically painful for pregnant women that they often react as if they have sustained a personal loss. Even the pictures of missing children on milk cartons seem like a special call to action for all pregnant women. The amusing part of this sentimentality is the kinship you immediately feel for all mothers of the world, from Carol Brady to the woman yelling at the whining child at Toys R Us. The world becomes divided into two groups, those who have children and those who do not. And you will be most interested in the subgroup of women who are pregnant when you are. When you are pregnant, it seems as though the entire childbearing population is pregnant too. You can't swing a loaf of bread in a supermarket without hitting a pregnant woman. You check each other out with uncontainable curiosity, but with the friendliness of comrades. You try to guess how pregnant your new comrade is and whether she is looking as good or as bad as you are at this point. And you will have no qualms about asking this complete stranger her entire gestational history. If you are pregnant at the same time as a celebrity, you would develop a familiarity with her pregnancy that would make you feel related to her in some way. For example, you may be pregnant with Gwen Stefani, Reese Witherspoon, one of the president's daughters, or maybe Kate Bosworth or Sienna Miller, and Britney's probably game for a few more. And you'll feel maternal about their children, even though you don't know them. Though I can't help but feel I know Sean Preston. Years ago, I saw on the 11 p.m. news that the star of a big television series suffered a miscarriage late in her pregnancy. I had my husband wake up immediately and take me to the hospital to make sure that our baby was still safe and alive in my stomach. I swear. Later, after you've had all your babies, you will keep an eye out on these women to see how they are doing getting back into shape. Many of my girlfriends were traumatized that Kelly Ripa got so thin after her last big fat pregnancy. I myself confessed to taking a dark joy when tabloid magazines show unflattering photos of brand new celebrity mothers caught off guard getting off an airplane after a 7-hour flight with a new baby. I want it, and I want it now. Immediate gratification is the goal of most pregnant women. It may appear to the unenlightened that pregnant women are just whimsically indulging themselves and taking advantage of their condition. This is not entirely true. Certain sensations take on a ferocity when you are pregnant that they never had in your non-pregnant state. And God help the person who stands between you and your satisfaction. For example, a non-pregnant woman can find herself needing to pee-pee when driving in a car with her mate. When this happens, she might calmly mention to him that she wouldn't mind stopping at the nearest clean bathroom if they should happen to pass one. And she'll probably add that if they don't happen to pass one, she can hold it until they reach their destination. The scenario changes when the woman is pregnant. Her voice takes on a twinge of hysteria as she blurts out that she has to go to the bathroom. She immediately sounds so desperate that you would swear she is so full that her eyeballs have started to float. Her frightened partner begins to look for an appropriate stop. The next thing he knows, her hand is on the door handle and she is preparing to hurl herself out of the moving car. She has to relieve herself so badly that she is willing to do it anywhere but the front seat of the car. She would consider doing it there, too, but she would have to sit in it for the rest of the trip. The guy's inability to completely comprehend the urgency of his darling's request to stop can be ground zero for a good hormonal fight. So our best advice to the non-pregnant parties in this situation is this. Don't ask questions. Immediately pull over and run around to your mate's side of the car. Help her out and into a hiding place behind a tree or road sign. And watch out for your shoes. Remember, extreme times call for extreme measures. If that sort of display regarding urinating shocks your baby daddy, just wait until he sees the pregnant you when you discover that you are hungry and you have no food within your immediate reach. A pregnant woman's hunger is no moderate or simple hankering. It is a hunger so ferocious that if the car isn't parked in front of some food-selling source within 30 seconds, the hapless man will find himself face-to-face with a sobbing woman who is tearing through the glove compartment trying to find the peppermint candy she picked up at the car wash a month ago. Perhaps there is some medical explanation, such as a rapid drop in blood sugar levels or something. I do know that it makes you feel anxious, cranky, and desperate. This is why we girlfriends suggest that you plan ahead for these hunger crises by keeping food in your car, in your relatives' cars, in your purse, in your office, in your locker, beside your bed. Well, you get our drift. By the way, mark any food stashed at work with the words pregnant woman's food. Touch on pain of death. Because there is nothing worse than reaching for your last snack only to find out the HR guy ate it. Bags of nuts and grains, granola bars and bananas are great rations, and they will keep you from streaking into a fast food drive-thru in a frenzy. Thirst, too, is immediate and gripping for a pregnant woman. Just wait until you try nursing if you want to know what dying of thirst really means. So, in addition to the snacks, you should have several bottles of water strategically placed. I think I hate my baby's father. Let's start with the simple premise that, by virtue of being a non-female, your partner will have absolutely no idea what it feels like to be you right now. He will not know your anxiety, your ambivalence, your insecurities, or your near-toxic hormonal state. That's enough right there to qualify him for the title of most clueless human. Trust your girlfriends when we tell you that even if he denies it to your face, your true love thinks that pregnancy has made you irrational, emotional, and unpredictable. All of the things most guys hate in a person, especially the one bearing his offspring, thereby binding him to her forever. I have found in my interview that when wives are present, the new daddies regale me with stories of their brave and pioneering partners who selflessly gave themselves over to pain and deprivation to produce their precious angel babies. Get these men in a group without women, however, and the stories of pregnancy insanity grow like the legend of the gerbil. Gary remembers the time his wife lay down on the floor of the frozen yogurt store because she felt nauseous. He recalls with agonizing embarrassment how the other shoppers had to step over and around her to get to the counter. Then there is Michael, who describes the quantities of food his pregnant wife ate as if she were a human garbage disposal. He goes on to piously explain how he was never allowed to finish his own meal because his voracious wife attacked his plate with a shovel. All of these husbands roll their eyes and nod in unison when one mentions the impossibility of coming up with the correct answer to the pregnant woman's favorite question. Do you still love me even though I'm fat? This one throws them all, because they don't really know whether they are supposed to tell their wives that they love them no matter what, since that implies that they do, indeed, think their wives are fat, or if it is wiser to say no, they only like thin women, like her. Few things are more irritating than losing your mind and having someone point that out to you at the same time. Get prepared for comments from your mate like, aren't you overreacting, just a little? Or, is this the real you or the pregnant you talking? How about, you used to be a lot more fun before you got pregnant? Or, my chiropractor's wife didn't need any medication when she delivered their baby, and I don't think you should take any either. Or, I know you have the flu, but do you really need that antihistamine? The chief complaint among the girlfriends seemed to be that our fellas don't find this pregnancy business as overwhelmingly important as we do. They can think of other things for hours, even days on end, while a pregnant woman, especially if it is her first pregnancy, can think of nothing else. To a pregnant woman, even war in the Middle East becomes about her baby in some way. Maybe we can pull out of Iraq and there's an oil shortage and she won't have enough gas to get to the hospital when she goes into labor. Men, on the other hand, tend to look at pregnancy as something that possesses their womenfolk, but is largely a non-event until the baby is actually born. I once called my husband, who was in New York on business, to complain that he clearly did not want the new baby as much as I did. When he rationally asked what evidence I had for this presumption, I told him that, even though I had been pregnant for 7 months, he had not spent one single minute thinking about what we were going to name the baby. I thought about that baby's name at least twice a day from the day I found out I was pregnant, and more often than that after the doctor told me I was going to have a little girl. My husband seemed to work on the assumption that the names were handed out at the hospital. One way that many husbands can and do share the pregnancy with their wives is by matching them pound for pound in weight gain. So many of my girlfriends report that their partner put on 10 to 20 pounds when they were pregnant. I think I read somewhere that Matt Damon did that very thing. Who knows? Maybe they're eating from nervous stress, or maybe they're just keeping their lady company at the feed bin. Some of them actually get cravings along with their mate. I don't think this is really a grand display of empathy, but rather a case of, if you get something, I want it too. As in, if you're going to have a banana split, I deserve to have one too. My husband took this me too business a bit further when he insisted that he caught every malady I had, only he had it worse. If I took to bed with bronchitis, he was sure that he had pneumonia. This was a clever ruse because no one would ever expect a man with pneumonia to take care of a chubby, crazy woman with a little bit of a cough. What can really be infuriating to a pregnant woman who feels that she is enduring her pregnancy with little or no genuine support or understanding from her partner is the gnawing thought at the back of her mind. It's all his fault. He did this to me in the first place. He comes away from a roll in the hay with a satisfied glow and the promise of a good night's sleep, and her life has changed forever. At no point is this blame felt more than during labor and delivery. It's infuriating to be lying in a hospital bed with your uterus contracting like a bucking bronco and seeing your birth coach eating something from the cafeteria and watching Wheel of Fortune. Life's just not fair sometimes. I'm scared to death. Fear is a common denominator among all pregnant women. It is neck snapping, the speed with which you can go from feeling joyous to feeling terrified upon learning that you are going to have a baby. First, there is a general sense of alarm at the whole prospect of growing a baby inside you and being responsible for it until the day you die. This is when you might start looking for an escape. Shortly after this, the fears become more specific. You don't just feel a huge, undifferentiated sense of worry, but you can list the individual things that terrify you from moment to moment. The fears usually break down in the following manner. Fear of miscarriage. Once you have come to terms with the shock and excitement of learning that you are pregnant, you will discover that sustaining that pregnancy becomes the single most important goal of your life. This fear of losing a pregnancy is not completely irrational. Statistics say that something like 1 out of 5 diagnosed pregnancies does end in miscarriage, and the odds vary according to such factors as how old you are, if you are pregnant with multiples, or if you have a history of miscarriage. And if you have ever endured a miscarriage or had a close friend go through one, you know that it is far more than a particularly painful menstrual period. To a woman who is eagerly awaiting the birth of her child, the loss of that child, no matter how early on it is cause for great grief and mourning. For some women, especially those who conceived without much trouble and who have never experienced any threat to a pregnancy, such as bleeding or actual miscarriage, sustaining that pregnancy means little more than using the elliptical machine instead of road racing. Other women, like myself, who tried for years to get pregnant, or who for some other reason think that their pregnancy is more fragile, the first 3 months are categorized by far more precautions. Almost every pregnancy book on the market would tell you that there is absolutely no reason for a woman with what is known as a low-risk pregnancy, ask your doctor to classify yours, to curtail her fitness activities in any way. Intellectually, I can begrudgingly accept this wisdom, but emotionally, especially for the precarious first 3 months, I reject it wholeheartedly. I know that the vast majority of miscarriages occur in the first trimester, or the result of a genetic malformation of the embryo, but I just cannot understand why anyone would want there to be one scintilla of a chance that taking her 90-minute kickboxing class was partly to blame. If you can take it easy, why not do so? The only reason why not is to live up to some current notion of being a superhuman who can gestate and swing from a trapeze at the same time. Sure, we've all heard of women who have done just that, but what do they have to do with you and your baby? The most important rule of pregnancy is, this is not a contest.